The White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the January 21st, 2013 installment of The Heretics Hour. I'm Carolyn Yeager, your host for the next 2 hours, coming to you live via The White Network at thewhitenetwork.com. The call-in number for the second hour is 1-830-433-4911. Again, that's 830-433-4911 for the second hour. Or you can email questions or brief comments to carolyn@carolynyeager.net. Tonight, I have two guests who could each fill the 2 hours as a solo guest, and they've both been on the Heretics Hour before, one quite a few times, but I thought it would be interesting to have them on together, and they agreed to come on together, despite the fact that they don't know each other. In fact, they didn't even recognize one another's names when I brought it up. Obviously, they travel in different circles, but both stand out in their own area of expertise and experience. I want to welcome Will Williams and William Fink to the show. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Carolyn.
Hello, Will. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Carolyn. Greetings. Praise Christ.
Well, and thank you for being here. Thank you both for being here. This is going to be a lot of fun tonight and interesting for the listeners. We already have quite a group of listeners joined in, and it's going to grow as we move along. So I want to say that another interesting point between you two is the similarity of your names, which is why I came up with the title for this show, which is Will Williams Meets William Fink, two Williams, and then you go by Will and Bill. So, you know, they're already, you have some things in common. And I'd like to start with current offerings on your websites as a way of explaining the differences and the similarities between you. They are www.williamlutherpierce.blogspot.com with the title The Legacy. The name of the website is The Legacy of Dr. William Pierce. And here's another William to join us. And then Bill's is www.christogenia.org, but specifically for tonight, a subdomain of that very large site named mk.christogenia.org. I'm giving these so that you can go there. You people who are listening at your computers can go to those two sites while we're doing the program. MK stands for Mein Kampf. It's mk.christogenia.org and William Luther Pierce, all spelled out, .blogspot.com. All right, so let's start with you, Will. Your blog is The Legacy of Dr. William Pierce. It's been up since 2011. Do you want to talk about your purpose for this site a little bit? Just introduce us.
Sure. Our purpose... I told you this on the other show we did back in the summer, but I figured since we're on the internet, everybody on here knows how to type. And since everybody's out there just kind of atomized and in disarray with no groups to join, that we could at least do something productive with our typing skills. So, we started putting out articles, just transcribing it, sitting down and typing them. I'll make a scan of an old article and send it to a typist, and he or she can transcribe it and format it and send it back to me, and we'll add pictures and put it up on this blog. And, it's Dr. Pierce. A lot of his work was pre-internet, so a lot of it's not out there. And, I just see that as being productive because his teachings are valuable. And, Pastor Bill Fink, he has, his viewpoint. And, I like to say, we have our viewpoint and he has Yahweh, or you have your, we have our way and you have Yahweh. But, this could be, Reverend Will meets Pastor Bill, because I was ordained a minister in the Church of the Creator back in 1988 by the founder of that church, Ben Clausen. And, of course, Church of the Creator takes a very dim view of Christianity. And Pastor Bill, well, he bases his beliefs pretty much in biblical scripture, from what I understand. And
well, you know, okay, don't speak for Bill. We'll wait and let Bill speak, and then we'll see where we're at here. But that, you know, that's right. What you've got, you're trying to promote the writings and the thinking and so on of Dr. William Pierce. And, you know, I was thinking before the program, I was taking a little nap, and when I woke up, I was thinking how there isn't anybody. I kind of want to get into the white, pro-white or white nationalist lack of a movement tonight. And you know, when we look for leaders, when we look for leadership, it's really hard to find anybody who's really exercising leadership the way that he did. And, you know, so he's important. It's too bad he's not here anymore, but he's not. So the best we have is to be inspired by what he said and wrote. But there's been nobody like him since. And then another one now I can't think of his name.
Schlitterman.
That's on yours. The other leader that we had who was dressed up in a uniform, I can't think of his name. Oh well, but
George Rockwell.
Yeah, Rockwell. You know, he was quite an active person who was really building things, but we don't have anything like that. So I have to give I have to look at William Pierce. When I read some things on your blog today, and I was just, you know, it was like I kind of forget about him, and then it comes across as how powerful he was in everything he wrote and spoke. I mean, he just really came across more than anybody, I think, since. So, okay, so it's very good what you're doing. And this is a big part of what this is what you think is the best contribution to make, is to keep promoting William Pierce's views. Is that right?
It's something positive. Like right now, for the last 3 days, I've been transcribing from the Best of Attack and National Vanguard an article from 1973, 40 years ago. It's called The Alienated Society. And as I type it, I assimilate what he wrote. And it's just so powerful. I don't know why more people don't want to just help with a simple project like this, because typing this stuff is really fun. You send it on the blog, then people can send it to forums and other blogs and whatever.
Well, I would think more people would. If I wasn't doing all the things I'm doing, I would certainly be willing to do that. And, you know, Bill, anytime you want to come in and say something while we're discussing Will's site, you're welcome to do so. But we'll do the same with your site in just a minute. So let's go on to your current post, the first post you have on there right now, which is Schlitterman, the artist of Blood and Soil, which you wanted to talk about a little bit.
That's the last one I put up on January 18th. Mm-hmm. And to your listeners, again, it's http williamlutherpierce.blogspot.com. And it'll come up as the first article, but it's Schlitterman, Artist of Blood and Soil. And it's about George Schlitterman van Langewade. I'm not a German speaker, so I'm sure I butchered that. But he was a graphic artist. And, there's a short bio there about him. And I put some pictures of his artwork there.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful stuff.
I added a YouTube video which has him singing one of his folk songs. So it's actually his voice and his music. He was a songwriter, and I have a picture of him there, a photo. And then today I found another picture that wasn't on the internet. It's in my my encyclopedic work by Mortimer Davidson, Kunst in Deutschland, 1933 through 45, Malleri 2.
And right.
I think it's a self-portrait. Since
well, it looks like him. It certainly does look like him.
But that's when I did an image search on that one, wasn't there. So I said, well, hey, let's put that one up. So I put that book up on my scanner, and there it is. Magic.
Well, I think that's great. Of course, and you know, you and I are both artists, and I want to congratulate you on selling your portrait of David Duke, which you sold recently, I understand.
Yeah, well, somebody the funds went to a good cause, you can rest assured.
Good, good. That's good. And this is, I hope people read this and, of course, listen to him singing. I've listened to it several times. We wanted to put it on this program, but I didn't have time to figure out a way to do it. I'm not very technically proficient. So they can go right there and turn it on and listen. And he's got a great portrait here in woodcut like of Adolf Hitler. Now, was he a follower of Hitler? Was he a National Socialist?
He was born 110 years ago, 1903. So he was contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
He joined the NSDAP in 1928, so he was early. And he lost a lot of his commissions. He was a professionally trained artist, but he lost a lot of his commissions once his politics came to the fore. You can relate to that. And anyway, he joined the SA, and in 1941 he volunteered for the Eastern Front. He was captured by the British, spent a year as a POW, and when he came out, his hard heart had been hardened. He never gave up. He kept the same politics till he died in, I think, 78 or something. But he was kind of like Dr. Pierce. Like the article said, he ignored social norms and the conventions of attire. He didn't care about money or possessions.
And, yeah.
You know, he was not a material man. He was a spiritual man.
Well, that's like a lot of us, right? At least it must be, because we don't have a lot of possessions. All right. Well, thank you, Will. That was good. Let's turn to Bill Fink now. And Bill, let's look at your, I'm going to switch to your Mein Kampf page. And, why don't you tell us, because there'll be a lot of people who don't know why you added this to your website, and how long have you been running this Christogenia.org and things like that.
Well, I began Christogenia.org in January of 2009, mostly as the home of my own writing, and my main website has almost exclusively my own writing. It has probably a couple of thousand pages, several hundred of my own essays and biblical translations, and many related things like that. I do have videos and articles occasionally from other sources when I want to use them to demonstrate a point on social or political issues, which should concern all white people today, right? The Mein Kampf Project, if you understand what we like to call or what we usually call 2C-line Christian identity, that then you understand that the Jews are the real devils in the world. I mean, there are others in league with them, but the Jews are basically the leaders of the pack, right? If you understand Christian identity, you truly understand the Bible, you'll understand that the history of our race on the earth has evolved in around a struggle between two groups of people, and today those two groups of people are represented by the white Aryan man on the one side and the Jew and the corruptors of all civilization on the other side. And if we really understand the events of the Second World War, we would understand that that was the The focal point of the Second World War was the Jewish will to destroy Aryan Germany in the heart of Central Europe and to take Europe over for themselves. And they enlisted basically with their power of the purse, which they gained which they've had for several centuries through the Bank of England, but they gained in America in 1913, that they actually enlisted the Anglo-American Saxon races to destroy their own brethren on a continent. And basically that's the way I see World War II and World War I. And that story has to be presented. World War II has to be presented in those terms. And that's what the Mein Kampf Project strives to do.
Okay. Thank you. There's a lot there. Talk about archives, you know, like the archives for William Pierce. There's a lot of, you've got a lot of things archived.
Well, the Mein Kampf Project, while my main site, while christogenia.org houses almost exclusively my own writing, you know, I have some copies of Greek classics that I've accumulated, and I have more that are going to be posted. But christogenia.org is almost exclusively my own writing, my own historical essays, my own biblical translations. Where the Mein Kampf site, well, I can't do everything, right? And there's a lot of excellent revisionist work done by other people, and I post that whenever I think that it's underrepresented on the internet, for one, and where it's crucial to the story that I'm trying to tell. And one example of that is I have an article by William Pierce on the Mein Kampf site, Gun Control in Germany, 1928-1945. It's an excerpt of the pertinent material from National Vanguard books. But that's something that, you know, they're always likening Obama to Adolf Hitler. And that's just a continuation of the big lie told by the Jews. That's all it is. And trying to say that gun confiscation in America, we're going to end up like the Jews because the Nazis confiscated the guns in Germany. And that's all a lie. And Pierce did a good job exposing that. So I posted his article so that I could show people, why rewrite the story myself if Pierce did a good job? So I could show people that this myth that the Nazis confiscated guns is basically a lie. So I take advantage of other people's writings when it's easier not to reinvent the wheel. But there is some of my own writing on a Mein Kampf site. Where certain things are pertinent, like my essays that prove that Adolf Hitler was a Christian and also prove that he didn't like pagans and little things like the lies of Otto Strasser and Douglas Reed pertaining to Adolf Hitler and the Bavarian communist Soviet state that sprang up for a while in 1919 and other little things like that.
Okay, thanks. Now you've also just recently put on something that is really important to me and should be important to everyone, and it is in a lot of places, but not it's probably not as well known as it should be. I took it from, I put it on my own site and referred to yours for the transcript and the videos because this is Sylvia Stoltz had given a speech, one of her first public, talks in November or something? Yeah, November at this anti-censorship coalition in Switzerland, and she... I appreciate that you put the transcript here because I was able to read it a lot faster than if I'd sat through of the video for 40 minutes or so. Which does have subtitles to it now. So that's good. But, I would like to see her actually saying it. Well, when I find time, I'll do that. But, she gave such a wonderful, clear explanation of how the German courts and probably other European courts deal with Holocaust, what they call Holocaust denial, and that there's no crime, there's no evidence of any crime, but they make it criminal anyway. And she makes that so clear, and people should read that or watch the video, but read it too and see how that's done and what a deception it is. What a total falsification it is and a travesty of justice. But now she's in trouble again. There's this guy in I don't know if he's a Jew, but he probably is. Kittner or something. I've got that on my own site, which I don't have in front of me. But he's trying to bring charges with the Swiss prosecutors against her and the man who sponsored the conference in Switzerland. And so, she's such an exceptionally brave woman. So I want to commend you for getting that on there so quickly. You're one of the first.
Well, she is a brave woman. She's very courageous. And the Holocaust, Holocaust revisionism to me is really only a small part of World War II history, which needs to be revised.
Well, sure.
Because, the entire thing is that the entire history of not only World War II, but of Europe all the way back to the Napoleonic times and the French Revolution is told through Jewish eyes. And it's all a lie and it's all misrepresented.
Yes. And well, it is. It is. Okay. So now I want to get back for a minute to Will, and then I'm going to let you guys talk about things. I've kind of been talking an awful lot. And that is, Will, I read today on your blog the Friday, November 30th editorial, or this is really for both of you, what I'm going to bring up here. Dividing the Race, it's titled. It doesn't have an author, but I assume it must be by William Pierce. And when I read it, it sounded like it. So, yeah, absolutely it did. So, some things that he said here that I liked in the beginning, he said the most important complication is that many white women, probably a majority, are on the side of their men. And many heterosexual white males have joined the other side. Furthermore, there is much which can be done about the situation. Well, then he goes on, but I was rather surprised to read that and pleased because we usually hear about how bad the white women are and what trash they are. And, but I agree with him that women would stick with their men, but, the men are not always very good examples. What do you say? What do you think he meant by that?
Well, exactly what he said. he wrote another essay years later, Fashion Before Truth, and how women tend.
Oh yeah, fashion.
They're trendy. They go with the ladies.
Yeah, he talks about that in this one too.
And I liked it when he said that they're given a choice between red hair curlers and blue hair curlers. He had quite a sense of humor.
He did. He was quite a brilliant man. He had to be, because he always got right to the essence of things. Well, then he goes on to say a little bit later, he was giving a talk to college students, and he said some agreed with him, but not many. Nearly all of the ones who agreed were males, so there was a little switch. But then he said, unfortunately, many of them males with a low testosterone level, who crept up to me quietly afterward and expressed their approval when no one else was around to hear them.
I was safe.
So he's criticizing the men.
Get a backbone, son. If you believe it, repeat it. Make a noise. Don't slither up here and nod your approval and with a wink. He's telling us to have the courage of our convictions, to own our words, to get out there and say that preserving our gene pool, protecting our gene pool, is necessary. It's the right thing to do. It's it's all just straightforward talk. So
did the two of you, either of you, both of you, what do you think that the internet has, while it's been a big help in so many ways, has brought about more people who are just on the sidelines talking and watching and so on, and using pseudonyms and so on, and not feeling they have to do any physical activity or any real activity or organizing?
Yeah, it's kind of lazy. Dr. Pierce called it the perfect medium for the liar. You know, anybody can be anything they want to be. A man can be a girl and, you know, tend to be on your side. And but you'll never meet them. And when you try to contact them, they're gone. Poof. You know, it's the internet. It's a means. It's not the end. It's a tool that we can use if we use it properly. But most of the activity on the internet is a lot of gossip and just trading information and stuff. There's really no purpose to it that I can see. It's everybody's all over the board. Whatever you believe, that's fine, you know. And Dr. Pierce had a pretty strict ideology, and he put it out there, and he was doing the fisherman like the Christian, you know. If you like it, come aboard, you know, and if you don't like it, go over there to Pastor Bill Fink. He'll have you.
what do you say to that, Bill?
Well, I don't quite see it that way. I think I'm probably just as picky as to who listens to me as William Pierce was. I'm more picky.
Okay, you told me you were a double seed line identity Christian, I may be wrong, but doesn't that mean that Cain was not really sired by Adam, but by the serpent in the Garden of Eden? Am I getting that right?
Well, you know, that's an allegory used to represent a race mixing event.
That's
what it is, okay? I have papers on that on my site if you want to go read them. Now, you could run along and do that.
I went to your site for a few minutes, but I saw where you said Hitler was a Christian and Jesus was a white man, an Aryan, and I think I nodded off and woke up a few minutes later.
Well, you know, that's the problem with you turkeys. That's the problem with you people. You know the Jews are lying today, but you take it for granted that they're telling the truth about the Bible and the ancient world. Why do you believe the Jews when they talk about the Bible? Why do you believe the Jews when they claim they're the people of the book? Had the Jews ever told the truth?
I don't believe them. No. My position is that Mr. Hitler was not a Christian.
He was absolutely a Christian. It's all throughout Mein Kampf. His Christian philosophy. You see, you don't know a damn thing about Christianity, so you can't recognize it.
Okay, well, all right. You got me there, Bill. Hey, but I've got a book, Hitler's Secret Conversations, which is kind of like my Bible. I've had it for 23 years.
Yeah, you got one of those Jewish books that they made up about Hitler, a bunch of trash they made up.
Yeah, which one is Hitler's Secret Conversations? Which one is that? Who put that out?
This was put out by...
Oh, I know what that is. Yeah, that's that guy, that British guy. I can't think of his name right now. I should have looked all this. I should have realized this was going to come up. And he was the one who changed... a lot of that to make it more anti-Christian, which it wasn't.
He made up the whole damn thing. None of that anti-Christian diatribe that appears in that book actually appears in the original language version of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And you fell for it. How do you feel about that? You fell for another Jew lie.
I fell for it, Pastor Bill. Hitler's Secret Conversations, published by Farrar, Straus, and Young, first edition, 1953. It was published in Britain under that title, translated from the French. And
well, right, and none of those anti-Christian statements appear in the French, and you fell for it.
Who was the editor of that? Isn't that Liddell? No, what was that guy's name? Was that Liddell Hart, or am I thinking of something else?
Trevor Roper. He wrote the
Trevor Roper, right.
Hadding says that that particular translation was biased against Christianity, and that there's another one that has come out since then. I've got the 1953 version reprinted in 1972.
Well, if you have a dog, you should put it on the floor, and you get yourself a puppy, and maybe the book will be put to better use.
Well, you know,
it's a known fact, though, Will, that this Trevor Roper change, add things, you know, and change all the stuff, change that, those, table talks. And it was mostly in the area of when it was about Christianity, to make Hitler say things very hateful toward Christianity. And he really did not have those feelings. Yeah, I'm with Bill there.
Read Mein Kampf, you'd realize that Adolf Hitler made positive statements about Christianity all throughout Mein Kampf. If you've actually ever knew anything about Christianity, you'd realize that National Socialism was its philosophical principles were actually based on sound Christian principles. If you actually knew anything about the National Socialist implementation of its platform when they came to power after 1933, you would understand that it was wholly Christian, that throughout National Socialist literature, Christian values, Christian morals were referred to again and again. Right.
Comment about the translation, because that's what we're talking about.
Well, you're talking about some garbage.
Let him say.
About two choices of Mein Kampf, the Mannheim and the Murphy. They both say essentially the same thing. One is a little more sympathetic than the other one. The other, but it's a better, more accurate translation, right? It's a matter of who translated it.
Mannheim, you know, I perused the Mannheim edition, and he basically calls Hitler a babbling idiot, not so many words, and then he went and proceeded to translate Hitler so that he would sound like a babbling idiot.
Well, Mark Twain said that when opening the Holy Bible, one should wear gloves.
Well, now, come on. Let's talk about Mein Kampf if we want to do that. Let's tack one at a time and wait for the other person to finish unless they're being really, insulting. Let's not insult each other.
Don't interrupt and talk over me and call me a turkey.
Well, you're calling some names too, Will. So have you read Mein Kampf?
Yes, I've read Mein Kampf.
Okay. All right.
In English. I've got both editions and I've compared them. And he talks a little bit about the God and the gods and goddesses, and he was appealing to an electorate that was 90% Christian. So he kind of had to lie to them or soft soap them to gain their support, right? But
That's a total misrepresentation of Adolf Hitler's Christian statements.
Yeah.
Hey, just let me.
I think it is too.
Whoa, hold on. There are Christian statements in Adolf Hitler's speech right up to 1945.
Okay. He wrote it when he was in his early 30s, and then when he was in his early 50s, he dictated that to Rudolf Hess, his aide. And then
he was in his 50s.
Well, I'm talking about the Hitler secret conversations that he did to Martin Bormann.
You're talking about the July's Trevor Roper invented. That's what you're talking about.
You know, and that thing, that book, whatever book it is that says that this was Martin Bormann, that he was talking to Martin Bormann and answered, that is fake. And what it was that there were some Martin Bormann saw to it that a couple of aides took notes during Hitler's talks at the table, because he would go on for hours and people, they realized it was so brilliant and it was just going to waste. And so they started taking these notes, and Hitler said it was okay for them to do that. And Bormann was overseeing that, because Bormann, to me, was a very faithful lieutenant to Adolf Hitler. I don't think he was a traitor or anything. And then these are the originals, and they never got, they were in German. And then when these translators got hold of them, like this Trevor Roper, he changed it around. So that's why it's not reliable, and you can't go by that.
Well, we just look at what actually transpired in the Reich, okay? Hitler had the crosses removed from the churches, replaced them with swastikas.
Are you kidding?
Well, what a total lie.
That's not what it is. Where'd you get that?
He had a Jewish comic book, right? You got this from a Jewish comic book.
Did he have Hitler Youth meetings on Sunday? Is that a law?
He didn't take the crosses off the church. He took them out of the classroom, and they put Hitler's picture up, I think, what happened in the schools. But that's not in the churches.
Hey, do you believe anything Savitri Devi says?
I don't care for Savitri Devi that much.
I like her. I like her. She says national socialism is infinitely more than a mere political creed. The fact that it is a way of life, a faith in the fullest sense of the word, one could say a religion, however different it may at first appear from every existing system thus labeled in current speech. Religions are not as easy to uproot as political creeds.
Okay, and don't read a whole lot, because I was going to tell you before the show that I don't want long things being read. Because we're going to talk about what we believe and what you think and what Bill thinks and not read from books. Well, and we don't care what Savitri Devi says.
Okay, well, you know what I like.
A racist would appeal so quickly to the words of a camel jockey. I don't get that.
Okay, camel jockey, okay, yeah. Well...
You see, the biggest
division in this so-called movement is the Christian patriots like you and the biological racists like me.
See, yeah, you're not a biological racist. You're a worshiper of Jews more than you accuse that of Christians.
And yet that double seed line stuff, isn't that Martin Lindstedt's creed, double seed line?
Oh, that's below the belt. Martin Lindstedt is a clown and a fool and... You can't. If you want to tar somebody with Mark Lindstedt,
you just
that's
the
wrong.
Biggest clown in white net and the biggest clown that calls himself a white nationalist. You just gave him credibility, right? Do you understand that?
You ought to defend him. He believes that Cain was sired by the serpent.
Well, there's a lot of people that believe the sky was blue and that the moon is made of cheese. I won't defend them either, right?
The sky is blue.
Well, that doesn't defend you just because you believe that.
How do you know the moon's not made of cheese? You been there?
All right, let's, this was not supposed to be an argumentative put down kind of thing, and let's be respectful.
That from the beginning, right?
You're against a Christian identity minister, and they're polar opposites.
Wait a minute. You are trying to attack, be in an attack mode, and there's not going to be any gain from that. Let's just discuss some of these things, but not this way of attacking.
Well, Hitler was not a Christian, not in his later years, certainly, Jesus, if he ever lived at all, was a Jew. He's not an American.
Well, let's accept that you believe that. And other people believe otherwise, and you're not going to really change your minds. Let's just accept that in advance, you know, so there's no sense throwing those charges back and forth. But the fact is that Adolf Hitler, I did a program myself where I researched the attitude toward Christianity in the National Socialist Party and members and so on and policies programs. And I concluded that it was basically Christian, and most National Socialists were Christian, some weren't. And some didn't like it, but most accepted it. And like you said yourself, Will, at that time, the majority of the population by far in Germany was Christian. And Adolf Hitler had no desire to turn that around and change that and dismiss it in people. He allowed them to have the religion they were used to. He was not a serious, I would differ with Bill there a little bit. I don't think he was really seriously. He wasn't a big fan of the Bible, but he was a fan of Jesus Christ as a personality. And he was a deep believer in God. And he thought Christian civilization was important to hold Europe together.
Was his God Jehovah, Yahweh, Allah,
No, it was, what did he call it, Providence, and he called it God.
Okay, that's
on the Mein Kampf project, I have a video of Adolf Hitler appealing to Yahweh by that name for retribution against
him. Yeah, I saw that today, Bill. Wow. He did use that word. Didn't he say Jehovah?
He may have said Jehovah, which is the...
Yeah, not Yahweh. Yeah.
Right.
But he did say that at one point there. He was angry, and he was using the Old Testament.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The National Alliance, the National Socialists, they didn't understand the Old Testament from a historical perspective, and very few people do. You have to read an awful lot of ancient history and an awful lot of biblical literature in order to do that. And most people who concentrate on racial issues of today and recent history and World War II revisionism don't read the classics and don't read biblical literature. That's what I do. I read.
We're a racial movement. Why should we be studying this 2,000-year-old?
Because if you don't understand the foundations of my race, you won't understand what's going on in the world today. And it's obvious to me that you don't.
We're Europeans. We're not from the Middle East. We are
absolutely from the Middle East. If you ever picked up a history book and read it, you might realize that.
What were we before Jesus came? All those thousands of years in Europe,
our ancestors
built in Stonehenge. What were we then?
That they were in Mesopotamia, they were in Egypt. They were all white, and they were our ancestors. The Phoenicians, the Hebrews, they were all white. They were our ancestors. The Scythians, the Persians, the Assyrians, they were all white, and a lot of them were our ancestors. Whether you like it or not, that doesn't make it not true.
The Scythians were in Russia. They weren't in the Middle East, were they?
The Scythians were indeed in the Middle East. In fact, Herodotus in 450 BC wrote that for 25 years, the Scythians ruled over all Asia, including Assyria, Mesopotamia, Persia.
Well, I'll defer to you on...
Can I break in here? Because I don't think we're going to have enough time. Well, there is hardly enough time to go into these issues about who was who and all. Way back then, but bringing up the racial issue, I mean, Bill, I know, is as much a racialist as you are, Will, and Christians can be racialists. I know a lot of very racialist Christians, and there's millions more, or thousands, hundreds of thousands more than I know. So the whole point is, it seems that we all have is saving our race and our racial solidarity, and I don't see that Christianity necessarily interferes with that or gets in the way. You're talking about the churches, the mainstream Christianity and so on that's been all sold out to the Jews, along with everything else. Why pick on the Christian church when everything else has sold out to the Jews and they held out longer? I mean, the Catholic Church held out pretty long.
Grounded in reality, it's otherworldly.
Well, that's your but that's your opinion, Will, and you don't like it. But that can't you allow other people to like it? And as long as they're racially loyal,
certainly go talk to an expert like Pastor Bill, who will tell you all about the Bible. He's read it upwards and downwards. He's translating it and finding Yahweh in Mein Kampf, but I'm a creator. I'm a cosmic theist. I'm a believer in the Hitler faith.
He believes in a Jewish theory of evolution, that one species can morph itself into other species, that all life came from one cell. I've read your cult's writing on that.
Well, I'm not in a cult, friend. Hey, quit calling me a cult.
You're talking over each other.
Okay, look, all right, happy James Earl Ray Day to everybody out there, and what a great day it is. We got the inauguration day. Obama swore in as president on Martin Lucifer Coon's Bible. I mean, is that the Bible you believe in, Pastor Bill?
Excuse me?
Is that the Bible you believe in, the one that...
I don't worship niggers. Don't even go there, all right? I don't worship niggers, okay? Don't even go there. Don't be stupid, right?
So the question was, is that your Bible, the one that Obama swore in on today?
What is the difference does it make if Obama swore in on it? They all swore in on it. You know, it doesn't matter. White people, black people, they all swear in on that Bible. What difference does it make?
Point is, Christianity is universalist. It's for everybody.
Christianity is not universalist. The Jews perverted it into something universalist. Oh, yeah. And a whole lot of white people followed along with that. Evolution is universalist. How about that?
Yeah, okay, well.
Well, you know.
How about you and that nigger descended from the same amoeba?
He also used Abraham Lincoln's Bible. Did the Jews pervert that one too? Huh? I mean, he's.
I think you and that nigger descended from the same amoeba. That's what I think. I think you should explain that.
Okay. You know, I think we should change the subject because this one is not working out.
Oh, it's doing fine, Carolyn.
No,
it's
not.
Just fine. It's going just fine. This is what we need to talk about. I mean, are we going to be?
Well, you're not getting anywhere because you know you've got.
Woman, or are we going to be a Christian movement? You know, this guy's calling me a cultist and a turkey gobbler and an idiot and a Jew and all this. So,
well, you started calling names, Will. You did. You started it. Okay. So let's. I think it's really important that we talk about the gun legislation that's being taken very seriously now, a very serious push for this by the Obama administration, helped along by the Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut. And I think this would be a good thing to talk about as far as white nationalism goes or white. You know, I don't like the term white nationalism myself. I don't know. Both of you don't mind it because Bill's told me he likes it fine. But for me, I try to come up with something else. But pro-white or white rights, white identity, and so on. But definitely, we're concerned with this. And I think that even though these politicians are talking tough in the states, that they're not going to let that go. They won't even follow the law if they pass it or whatever. That's not, you know. If they just keep pushing it along, they will keep moving it forward. So I think that there needs to be a big, big stand against it. And also I think that this Sandy Hook PSYOP, what I call a PSYOP, is so vulnerable and that can be used to derail this whole thing. And I would like some conversation on that, if I could get it.
It's just a side issue to me. And,
it's huge.
As far as white nationalism, it's just a term, but if you go with the premise of our race is our nation, the acronym ORION, our mm-hmm. race is our nation, well then white nationalism is perfectly acceptable with that, and I think that's how Bill and I both look at it, you know, it's... It's our race comes first, and so white nationalism, I'm cool with it.
You know, I try to use terms that other people understand, right? And when you say white nationalist, even though we don't like the term, I don't like the term two-seed line Christian identity, but I use it because people understand what I'm saying when I use it, for the most part. Other nationalists do. I don't like the term white nationalist, but I use it because when I use it, people understand what I'm saying. That there's not yet, you know, white nationalism, white is too general to be nationalism, right? I mean, the white race, it is... You know, many different branches and nations. We have Poles and Germans that have really not – well, they have some things in common culturally, but that they've always had an enmity historically. Can they be white nationalists together? What we need are a healthy Polish nation, white Polish nation, not the converso Jews, right? And a healthy German nation that recognize each other's right to existence and don't fall for the tricks of the Jew so they don't destroy each other, right? I mean, and the same thing with the Irish and the Scots and the English. So the term white nationalist is too general, but when we use it, people understand what we mean. So that's why I use it.
Yeah. Well, what about this gun control thing, Bill? Do you think that's serious? Will was saying he thinks it's just a side issue.
Well, I can understand because for me personally, it's a side issue also because it's not my area, right? I'm not the current events guy usually. I mean, I know, Carolyn, we have covered some things in current events that I think are are broader, you know, fit better into the broader historical context, like what was going on in the European Union and the Jewish European Union, the Jewish European Parliament, and things like that, right? But Sandy Hook is important. It's important because this time, more than any other, we have an opportunity if we use it correctly, to show that this news is being manufactured, that these events are not what they're really being represented as being, and the Sandy Hook thing is all a scam. And we use it properly, we can hopefully use it like another 9/11. 9/11 woke up a lot of white Americans, but not hardly enough.
And that was a lot bigger than this is. But this has got a lot of serious problems if you can get people to pay attention to it.
Excuse me.
I saw the article you sent to Bill and me, Sandy Hook and CNN and what's that queer name?
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper, yeah, the house queer at CNN. He was he came out early with news about Sandy Hook and come to find out that the footage they were using was not from Sandy Hook, but from another school a few miles away. And it might have been from a drill that the children had gone through about this kind of crap, and they had filmed it, and then they went on, the police used it and all this. Well, gee, imagine that. We're being lied to again by the Jewish media. It reminded me of when we were trying to go to war with Saddam Hussein, and they talked about how he was destroying all the wildlife, and they showed pictures of these oil-drenched birds that he was murdering and playing on our sympathies and love of the environment and all. Well, come to find out, those birds only lived in Alaska, and those pictures of those birds came from the Exxon Valdez oil spill up there. I mean, they were used. This is nothing new, right?
No, you're right. Now, it's nothing new, but I think if we take that attitude, well, it's just the media lying to us again, that would be a big mistake. Because in this case, we've got supposedly 20 children killed between 6 and 7 years old and 6 teachers and all this thing. And they're going to carry out their gun control legislation based on this. And if we just look at it that way, because in this case, for them to use false information, false footage, and there's a lot more that can be said about the false footage about this event, that nothing really, they don't have any real video of anything really taking place at the Sandy Hook school. And so this really could blow things wide open.
Don't you think it's a psyops operation, a psychological operation where Adam Lanza was was conditioned to do this or something? I mean,
I don't think Adam Lanza did it. But that's just an argument on details. I don't think I think that they killed him, but I don't think he went in and killed all those people. He could not have. Think about it. He was a very slight person, and he couldn't have been gotten so done up on some kind of pills that he had, and I don't even know that he wasn't even taking medication, as far as they say. So even if he did take some stuff, he couldn't go and turn himself into a wild murderer like that in that short period of time and kill all those people. It would be impossible. And everybody knows it.
His mama was afraid of him and his friends.
Oh, she was not. You read that somewhere.
I read it somewhere.
Yeah. And it's she. There's.
Well,
you
anyway.
Know, they've written a whole lot of stuff. Go ahead, Bill.
I don't know in this case if I would believe anything that the media says about any of these characters. First, because it might be evident that there was no shooting at all, that there may not have been a shooting at all. Has anybody seen a body? Has anybody seen one child's body? Of course not.
They're proliferating. We all had guns growing up. We never had shootings like this. It's become part of our culture, the violence and.
I think a lot of them have been set up. I don't think they're all legit, even if the people are on drugs. I think they use that. kind of as a, you know, how many people go that crazy? Usually they do violence to themselves or members of their family. They don't go out and kill people in public like that. I think most of those are psyops.
Some Hispanic kid in New Mexico killed his whole family today. Just went in, shot, killed his mama, then killed his brothers and sisters, and killed.
They kill their family, but they don't go out and kill a bunch of other people.
Unless he's a son of Sam with voices in his head. I can't imagine that the Jews made him do it. I mean, good God.
No, I mean, that's the wrong way to put it. I'm not, I believe that's probably what this kid did. But I don't know. I haven't read about it. But I think this is a totally different thing because it's being used to push legislation. That's something that would be a red flag right away.
Well, they've been doing this for years. Obama surrounded himself with all those little children when he signed those executive orders the other day for gun control. Tapping into that, like those 6 and 7 year old kids knew what the hell he was doing with them, you know. It's all propaganda, and white people better stand up and not let goddamn government disarm us. Keep your guns.
Well, I think there needs to be plenty of talk about that. I think people need to quit going along with the story. Too many white people are going. I mean, even aware white people like ourselves are going along with this story, the government story, and accepting it, and then still wanting to be against the gun control. But I think we need to break open the deception that the media is using. I think that's just as important. So we've got two things here, gun control issue and fake news issue. And we really need to take advantage of this to get to expose the fake news issue.
Well, that's what you said before is the key, Carolyn, is how to get people to pay attention. You know, Mike Delaney has published millions of copies of 9/11 Missing Links, and people still don't. They don't care. They're not fazed by it.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're going on our break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in 5 minutes with our two wonderful guests, and we will continue for another hour, so stay with us.
Es ist einer dieser Tage, an dem wir bei Oma sind. Es duftet nach Kuchen und Kaffee. Wir lauschen ihren Worten, ihre Tränen sind nicht zu übersehen. Wenn sie von Oma erzählt, sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang, und ich schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich vermisse dich, und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gabst dein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt. Erzählt von einer Zeit für uns unvorstellbar, geprägt von Tränen, Glück und Leid. Und immer wenn sie Opa sah, klingt ihre Stimme seicht und warm. Sie schließt ihre Augen und sie fällt schlafen in meinen Arm. Sie alle gingen damals einen schweren Gang,
von der Schaue auf die Bilder an Omas Wand. Opa, ich vermisse dich und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gab sein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt. Opa, ich vermisse dich und ich glaube fest daran, egal was man auch erzählt, du warst ein guter Mann. Die Oma sagt, du warst ein Held und gab sein Leben für das Land. Ihre Tränen lügen nicht und zu gern hätte ich dich gekannt.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and this is the Heretics Hour tonight. We're now moving into our second hour, and my guests are Will Williams and William Fink. And we went over their websites earlier in the first hour. It's www.williamlutherpierce.blogspot.com, The Legacy of Dr. William Pierce, and Bill Fink's website is www.christogenia.org, and his special subdomain mk.christogenia.org, which stands for Mein Kampf. And now, you know, I would like to lead from what Bill was saying right as we went into the break. I would like to lead that into this, asking both of you to comment on the state of our fight for white autonomy in the U.S., and is there a fight or is there only surrender? And then also, though, maybe before we go to that, what both of you think should be done about this gun control legislation, beyond just saying keep your guns, but, you know, they're going to make a real effort to pass laws, and when the laws are passed, people obey the law. They're afraid not to. And let me just throw in here that about assault weapons. You know, I used to think about assault weapons. They say people don't need assault weapons, and you know what? It sounded reasonable to me. But I've been listening to some people, and now I understand that individuals need assault weapons. They need these types of rifles in order to defend themselves from the crazy people that come around. And a little revolver or something, you know, in your house is not going to be enough. You can't defend yourself properly with that.
Well, you don't need an assault weapon to defend your home, but you do need military-type weapons to defend against a tyrannical government that has military weapons. That was the intent of the Second Amendment, was the armed militia was us.
And, well, I think you need automatic weapons to defend your home.
Well, let me say a couple of things.
Why not a grenade? All you need is gasoline. I mean, what are they going to ban? They're going to ban everything. I mean, if you're in an area like I'm in, where every neighbor around you has plenty of guns, and
yeah, that's different.
You know, but I pity you poor people who live in Chicago and New York and Washington D.C. surrounded by niggers, armed niggers, marauding niggers. And you can't even own a handgun. I mean, they've already disarmed you, friends.
Well, that's right. That's very, very dangerous. So let Bill say what he wants
to say. Let me say a couple of things. First, he's right about the Second Amendment. We're supposed to be able to defend ourselves from tyrannical government, and we're supposed to be able to defend ourselves from possible invaders, and we're not supposed to rely upon the government for our self-preservation, because the government cannot deny us that. The government cannot provide us that. They cannot make that promise for your safety, and they don't. They really don't care about your safety. If they cared about your safety, we would have no niggers. Now, the thing about assault weapons is that the whole argument is a lie. Real assault weapons are already out of the reach of most gun owners. Because real assault weapons, fully automatic weapons, are outlawed in most states, are very difficult to obtain permits for. Okay? These semi-automatic weapons that the media calls assault weapons, most of them are basically just souped up squirrel shooters. They're souped up hunting rifles. And they're no better than your average real tough looking assault weapon like an AR-15 is really no better than the average hunting rifle. They're not. And they just look
military. I disagree with you there. You can put an AR-15 on Super Smash. That's a little bit different than plinking squirrels. Well, you ask about what can we do about protecting our gun, right, Carolyn? I suggest a couple of things is to go lobby your local county sheriff and inform him what some of these other sheriffs are doing around the country where they're refusing to enforce federal gun laws. And also stay up on what your state legislature is doing about it. There's several states now, I think Tennessee is one of them where I live, where they're just not going to go along with it. They're gonna rebuke Obama and his,
yeah. Well, they say that. I wonder if they will actually see it through. Because
it's just something in the real world that we can do is force this legislation on your state. Your fellow citizens and get your sheriffs, the highest law in the land, to rebuke it, to say he's not going to take away his citizens' guns.
I'm going to call my sheriff this week or tomorrow or something, because I used to know him. I'm going to call him and ask him what his stand is on all this. We're pretty good around where I live, but I'm going to do that. That's a good idea, Will, and everybody.
I met a sheriff last election cycle, a man who was running for sheriff here, and I went to a question and answer period with him. He gave his speech, and I raised my hand, and I said, what are you going to do about all these illegal immigrants? And he was just taken aback. He couldn't believe I'd ask such an impolite question. He said, well, that's a federal problem. We can't do anything about it. I said, I'll be goddamned if we can't do anything about it. We round them up and we take care of them. And, that's the attitude of a lot of these guys. They just don't want to do the right thing. They want to just go along to get along and try to win their election just like everybody else does.
Right.
In politicians.
Well, that's good. I think that's good. Just 1 second, Bill. That this is something everybody can do who cares about this. We can go to our local authorities and talk to them about it, because that's where it's going to come down to that. And there is a something's been circulated. I just saw it, but I wasn't able to really look at it. A sheriff's group saying that they, not going to, if anything like that is passed, they're going to not carry it out, and they want other people to join them and so on.
Well, state's attorney generals can deputize state and local law enforcement to enforce federal laws like immigration laws that aren't being enforced, or they can go against illegal laws. Tennessee's there's a rumbling in the volunteer state. Western Tennessee lost. That's black Tennessee. But in eastern Tennessee, up in these hills, that this is a good place to be when the shit hits the fan, pardon it, my French, but I really feel for you people in the cities. You better get out. You better make plans.
Okay, Bill, your turn.
Well, you know, I was in law enforcement in the 1980s, right? Cops don't know the first thing about the Constitution. Cops don't know anything about the Bill of Rights. They're not taught any of that unless they go learn it on their own. Most sheriffs were cops. They were county cops. They were local cops that eventually, being politically motivated, ran for sheriffs. Most of the sheriffs that I ever knew were ex-cops that ran for sheriff and became sheriffs. And cops only know what their academies teach them about the state codes and statutes in whatever state they're in. They don't have a clue about the Constitution. And that's the case in I'd bet among 99% of the nation's cops, that they think that they only know what they're told for political expediency and what they're trained in their state statutes
I don't think we can depend on police to turn against their employers or whatever and, protect the people.
Not as long as they get a paycheck and that paycheck has perceived value, they won't.
No, they won't.
They're authoritarian by nature, and they're gonna uphold the law. But unfortunately, the law is being interpreted for them by in seminars, closed door, invitation only seminars by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL, defining what a hate crime is and how awful we are, and we don't get a hearing. You know, we're subject to treble punishment just because we may belong to an organization or something. And this is these law enforcement people. There, a lot of them are just like us. They just they haven't had the Riot Act explained to them in terms that they understand. You know, it's race.
Mm-hmm.
But their wives are white, their children are white, all their family's white, you know, and it's going to come to that. I don't particularly care to run for sheriff, but I'd like to be able to communicate with my sheriff and let him know we're out here, you know.
Well, I think that's what we should be doing. I think we should take hold of this gun control issue, and we should go to our local authorities, especially the sheriff, and talk to the sheriff and find out what he has to say. And if he's wishy-washy and mealy-mouthed about it, then to get some people together and to, you know, just continue to press on these things, because this is where it's going to come down to. If this would be where I guess the old militia was thinking, in terms of, you know, where you get local resistance.
Well, the sheriff can have some talking points that you can learn and go to your own sheriff from an informed point of view. You know, just look up some of these sheriffs who are in Montana and Wyoming out west, and you got the internet; they're not hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
You get your talking points and go talk to your sheriff.
Well, I won't have any trouble talking to my sheriff. He was always a pretty nice guy, Bill.
Most sheriffs and sheriff's departments get funding from federal law enforcement programs. They get funding from federal law enforcement agencies. They work closely with them. They identify themselves as being on the same side. They don't really see the differences between states and states' rights and federal police and federal tyranny. And they just don't identify themselves that way. They think that it's all part of the same system. It's all good. And they don't want to risk losing funding and taking a stand, even a lot of the sheriffs that know the Constitution and the difference between federal legislation and constitutional law or what we expect in constitutional, that they still don't want to risk losing their funding and their status and the federal programs that they participate in.
The federal government got this kind of power through taking over the funding and taking over all these things from the states.
Absolutely.
Getting the states' money and then sending it back to them.
Absolutely.
See, step by step, we give in. I mean, we constantly have allowed all this well, Jewish control and Jewish power to take place, and liberal and power to take place, and not really taking a stand. And what makes me sick is that ever since I got into this from like 2005 or something, I hear people saying, well, when this happens, then I'll be, you know, then I'll be out in the street with the rest of them. Or when this happens, this, when it gets bad enough, people will stand up and do something. No, as bad as it will get worse, and still people won't stand up and do something. So that shouldn't be listened to.
Well, people sell them out. I mean, people sell themselves out. They're hordes. I mean, people want federal dollars coming into their districts. They elect the biggest whore lawyer they could find to bring federal law enforcement dollars into their districts. And the federal prison system, for instance, is basically used as a jobs program for depressed areas. And they love building big $25 billion, well, that's an exaggeration, but several hundred million dollar federal prisons in depressed areas, and it brings people in from outside as employees. It brings people in from outside to visit. It pumps up the census numbers in the counties.
That's a good point, Bill. Right here in my county, we are a very depressed, economically depressed county. We only have 18,000 people in the county. And they built a prison here 15, 20 years ago. And, of course, it's 70% black.
Right.
County that's almost 98% white.
So
the downside is that these niggers' families move here so they can visit them. And they hire nigger guards. And all of a sudden, we've got a nigger problem where we didn't have it before.
The merchants and other people in the county love the money it brings in, and they worship that instead of their own race, and they basically sold themselves out.
Maman,
is that what you say?
Right, Maman.
I was trying to use the French pronunciation, Maman.
Okay.
It's the love of mammon. It's the love of money, and people sell themselves out. And it's the same thing with these sheriff's departments with federal law enforcement dollars. And it is true that the ADL is the primary source of information that all of the country's law enforcement turns to when it comes to religious sects and hate groups. The ADL is teaching all of our law enforcement agencies what hate is. So when you have the Jews, the most hateful bastards in world history, teaching our law enforcement what hate is, what do you think is the outcome of that?
Okay, I'm gonna open up something here about our white leaders or our white movement or our white whatever and how well it's doing. And I'm going to talk about, which I send to both of you, this radio interview that David Duke did with Gordon Duff on December 13th. And I listened to it just this past week, and I was really, really horrified because, you know, I have written about Gordon Duff, and I have a very poor opinion of him. And he is part Jewish, and I think he's a disinfo agent, basically. But now Duke has become very friendly with him, and he said about Gordon Duff. Gordon Duff is the editor, runs the Veterans Today website, which has kind of gone downhill since it was big heyday like a year ago, but it's still going. And David Duke said some things. He seems to be very good friends with Gordon Duff. And he says he's a man he very much admires and respects. And Gordon said, as with David, I have a lot of Jewish friends. And then David said towards the end, as they were saying, after they said goodbye to him, I think, I love this guy. You know, and Gordon was lying through his teeth through the whole show, you know, bragging about all these people he knows and, you know, all these intelligence agents that work at Veterans Today and all, you know, all this stuff, and which he always talks about. And, you know, I just say, what is wrong with David Duke? And why is there some reasoning behind what he's doing? Hattie Scott, gave some reasons, but I don't like it. Hadding has come in on the call, so he's here if he wants to say something. But you two get a chance to answer that first. Especially
yeah,
you.
I'm listening to that, and I know David, and he's widening his horizons, I believe. And he's a politician, Carolyn, so he's, you know, a politician has to kind of please everybody. And but I'm not going to attack David Duke because he's on, what is it, Rents Radio? I never listened to that, never listened to David's show until you sent me that. And but that Dave, that Gordon Duff fellow, I'd seen articles from Veterans of the Day before, being a veteran, you know, and I passed along a few that I read that I had no idea who owned it or anything, but they were interesting. And then I hear him. I don't like the sound of the guy. He comes on saying that Veterans Today is a multicultural military organization. He's not anti-Semitic, but he's anti-Zionist. And he's got 200 employees. Good God, what we could do with 200 employees. You know, what shocked me the most was when he was bragging. And he said he had had three former FBI deputy directors on staff.
Yeah.
Goddamn. He says that his company maintains our nation's no-fly list. I mean, does that include domestic terrorists that this not anti-Semitic Jew boy? I mean, that was the point that I got out of that, and I actually made a note of it, but the rest of it was just bullshit.
It was. You know, I've heard Gordon Duff on quite a lot of radio shows, and when he gets going, he just lies like a trooper. I mean, he says anything, and every time it's a little different. You know, he's just like making it up as he goes along, and I don't understand why people keep thinking that they're going to learn something.
Obviously, quasi-official in league with our Jewish occupation government. You know, he's got these all these former Justice Department officials in his employ. And, God, it's, well, it's just another piece in the puzzle. But I'm not going to attack David Duke. God, I'm hearing one of his first audio tapes from 1975, and he said all we need to do is when the credits roll on TV or in the movies, that we require that every Jew's name, whether they use their anglicized name or their Jewish name, must glow in a bright fluorescent glow so people realize that it's mostly Jews. I said that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't think it's brilliant. We should understand that Hollywood and television are Jewish, and we should unplug them. We shouldn't support them at all. But we shouldn't, any white man who goes to a movie and pays to watch these Jew movies that come out of Hollywood, any white man that supports these sporting events and everything that the Jew puts out on television, the white men that do that, they have purchased their own slavery, and they deserve it.
Well, Bill, we agree on something. We definitely agree on that. I don't go to movies. I've got a TV, but I don't watch Nigger Ball. I don't care who's in the Super Bowl. And my wife, we like to watch old movies, and I'm kind of a news junkie, so I like to keep up on what's what the enemy's putting out there. But
well, I hope you just keep in mind that that a lot of it is fake. And these newscasters and news presenters are all fake, too.
By supporting the Jewish media and Jewish Hollywood, we are paying for our own shackles.
Well, we've done it all along. We've paid the bill for everything that's doing us in. But Countercurrents, speaking of white leadership and so on that people fall for, at Countercurrents, they write movie reviews and post movie reviews regularly. So there you go. You know, instead of telling people not to go to these movies, they encourage them to go and talk about them and so on.
Yeah, well, people would buy movies and DVDs and all that Jewish entertainment. They bought their own slavery. They pay for their own shackles, and they deserve them. That the as for David Duke, I'm not going to. I've never been a fan of his, but that, you know, he embraces Arabs. I wouldn't embrace Arabs. The idea that we could be anti-Zionist and not anti-Jew. Yeah, you know, I'm anti-Antichrist, right? I'm anti-Jew. There's no doubt about it. We have had a Jewish problem for millennia before 1948. Well, we've had a Jewish problem for many, many millennia before 1948. Mm-hmm. And the Jews were run out of every nation mm-hmm. in Europe long before there was an Israel in Palestine in 1948.
Exactly right.
In the 1930s or at the Balfour Declaration or whenever you want to start Zionism, we've had a Jewish problem many millennia before that.
Well, I think Will put it very good. And then he said that David Duke is a politician. I think that's probably the way to look at it. And I expect things from people, or I'm just really looking for the leadership. And everybody is kind of sitting, on the Internet hoping some big leader will come along. Who can do something, and that worries me.
They're always compromisers. Politicians are always compromisers, and for that reason, they never have a clear vision.
Well, that's right. That's right. Hadding, you want to say anything? Well, I guess not. He's on the line. But what?
Dr. Pierce said we were in the educational phase of the revolution, and we're experiencing a struggle for of ideas, what ideology we're going to embrace as a resistance movement. And Bill's got his ideology, which is Bible based, and Dr. Pierce is was based more in nature and rationale, science, and there's really two movements. I can't say this enough.
Stay that way for a long time, and that's because I understand it that pagans and creatards or the World Church of the Creator Christianity is based on Judaism, and it's a lie, and my beliefs aren't based solely on the Bible. They're based on all ancient literature.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you, but wait.
My beliefs are based on all ancient literature, not only on the biblical literature. And if you understand all ancient literature, you would understand that a lot of the spiritual values and beliefs which are found in the Bible are found in all ancient literature.
You know, I think we should be satisfied if people are racially based and not impute to them ideas that they don't. That they don't have just because they are under the banner of, say, Christianity, or if you're under the banner of I don't even like the word paganism, but if you're under the banner of what banner are you under, Will? What is your religion? What are your beliefs?
Banner, I'm like you, Carol. I'm a nature boy. You're a nature girl. I'm a nature boy. My church is right here on this mountain of mine. I go out and
Now there might be people like that who are very multiracialist, who believe in nature's religion. That's very, very likely. In fact, I know a creator. In fact, it's that guy Joe who did the Caucasian persuasion, arguing. He seems to have been a creator, because that's what he sells that book. From his program, he was doing that, and he's quite friendly now with Jews and doesn't think we should discriminate against all Jews because there's good Jews and
I put up a post around when Matt Hale found out that this Joe the Creator guy had a show called The White Voice, and he'd interviewed Harold Covington, and then he wanted to interview me, and I said, "Look, friend, you're not going to interview me until you take that the interview of that enemy off there. I don't have any desire to be associated with him or you." And he got all upset, and then Matt Hale found out that he was doing that, and you know, we can't talk about all this, but I'll put a few posts up as comments addressing some of this, because we really can't discuss it like this when we're talking over each other. But if you'll let me make some comments and not let it get lost in moderation, I think that's where it gets sorted out a little bit, you know?
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, link to things. Don't just post the whole articles when you can link to them. Now, Hadding, did you want to say something before we go on to a public trust in government?
Well, yeah. Bill Fink said there that the views of Christianity are the views of all ancient literature. I believe that's what he said.
No, I said that a lot of the beliefs that are reflected in the Bible are reflected in all ancient literature. That's what I said.
Okay, well, in that case, first let me say that some people say that the doctrine represented by Paul is different from the doctrine of the Gospels.
Well, they're liars, and I'm addressing that right now on a long-going series called Against the Paul Bashers on my Saturday night program. I suggest you listen to it.
Yeah, well, it was the
there
position.
You go. You know, he won't listen to it. I can guarantee you he won't listen to it. So there you go. See, we can't inform one another if we're not going to listen.
Paul, that's Saul. He was a Jew, right?
Yeah, Saul.
And then again, there are those that say that the position of the Gospels is not compatible with the Old Testament. And I can tell you...
You know, Jews say that, right? Jews say that.
Yeah, we Jews say that.
There are also Christians who say that. They call it a different dispensation.
Do you like the New Testament, Hattie?
Catholicism is in
conflict. I'm not any kind of Christian.
I know, so why are you comparing the two?
Well, it's just that Bill Fink is pretending that the spiritual position of all ancient literature is the same, and even within Christianity there are divisions.
Well, you know, he's not pretending. He's saying what he believes, so...
I was talking on general terms first. I wasn't talking about, fine points of Christian doctrine like you are. I was speaking on general terms, and I said that spiritual beliefs found in the Old Testament, in the Bible, are found in all ancient literature. If you can't quantify that, if you don't want to ask me what I meant by that, well then don't try to guess and don't try to pick out...
So it's plagiarized.
You know, obscure differences among Christians to try to prove me wrong. That's ridiculous, Hadding.
Well,
yeah, it's not helpful. Let me remind the listeners that they can call in too. At this time, we've still got almost a half hour left. 830-443-4911. I just want to let the listeners know that. And let me check my email. You go ahead.
Yeah, Schopenhauer, who was a favorite of Adolf Hitler's, said that Christianity was Platonism for the masses. There's certainly some justification in that. There's some resonance between the teachings of Jesus and Platonism. I want to ask you, if you're going to claim that the doctrine of National Socialism is Christian, how can you separate that from these other ancient doctrines which you say are the same? I don't know how you can split that hair.
I didn't say they were the same. Why don't you just represent honestly what I said? Do I have to repeat it for a friggin' fourth time?
Hattie, you're not being helpful.
Do I have to repeat myself for a fourth time? Are you dense?
Okay.
I said that spiritual beliefs found in the Hebrew Bible are found in all ancient religions, in all of the ancient literature and meaning of the white race, of course, okay? You want to talk about the belief in a heaven, the belief in a hell, the belief in a creator, the belief in an afterlife, you'll find it in Sumerian literature, you'll find it in Germanic literature, you'll find it in the earliest Greek literature, you'll find it in the earliest Roman poets. That's what I meant, Hadding.
I don't think
in Egyptian literature, they were all white.
Are you dense, Hadding?
Yeah, I don't think there's any hell in the Greek religion.
Yes, there is. Hades is hell, Hadding.
The House of Hades. Yeah, but everybody goes there, except a very few people that legendarily...
Well, everybody's going to hell.
Well, everybody doesn't go there, Hadding. Some people went to Olympus, and some people went to Hades.
Okay, you don't know much about Greek religion there, Bill.
I don't know not much about Greek religion. I read Homer, Hesiod, the epic cycle, the tragic poets. I know what they say. Some people went to Olympus. Some people went to the Isles of the Blessed. Some people went to Hades.
You know, Bill reads Greek, too, Hattie.
I know. I heard him say that he taught himself.
Come on, you're coming on here just to be, you know, kind of unfriendly.
Well, no, it's just that my point is he's saying that the same spiritual content is to be found in all ancient literature.
Said you know, this is a point that doesn't really interest most people.
You still don't get
But he's using that to argue that National Socialism is Christian, when really it just derives from a...
Whoa. I wasn't using that to argue that National Socialism was Christian. That's a totally different topic. You're a straight clown.
Okay, let's not
stop misrepresenting what I say.
Now, I have not called Mr. Fink here any names.
Okay, but you're kind of
five times.
Well, let's he's making some outrageous.
All right, let's not be childish. Yeah, let's go on to public trust in government. There was a 2013 edition, which just came out. It's called the Annual Edelman Trust Barometer. It's a Chicago PR firm, and they do this every year. And they take supposedly, you know, they do a survey and find out. And they announced that trust in business in general, people's trust in business to do what is right is at 50%. And trust in business leaders to tell the truth is only at 18%. And trust in banks and financial services is at 50%. Trust in the news media is 53%. That's too high, but people do trust it. The most trusted business sector was technology with 77%. So people are going kind of like probably if they had science in here or something, it would be higher in technology and so on. But somebody's calling. And trust in government to do what's right is only 41%. Trust in government leaders is only 13% to tell the truth. So what do you have to say about that while I take this call? Anybody?
I don't trust polls.
Well, I don't either, but you know, now I've got two of them.
70% of Americans want to take away assault rifles. So, you know, it just depends on who's doing the poll and how the questions are asked and who they're asking. And don't put much stock in those polls.
I think this is wrong because I've got this long number. I've got a phone number. I forgot how to do this. There's a 860 and an 803 phone numbers here. But I'm supposed to have a number that I can...
I have some more to say about National Socialism and Christianity if I get a chance. If Bill won't shout over me.
Oh, come on.
Well, we'll stop misrepresenting my words or just leave me alone and you won't get shouted at. I'm not going to take your lies and your bullshit. I'm not here to be lied about. And ridiculed. I'm just not here for that.
Go for it, Hattie.
Well, yes, I actually read a little bit in Mein Kampf, and Hitler talks about religion in Mein Kampf. First, his attitude toward Jews fundamentally had nothing to do with religion. He says that it wasn't until he was 14 or 15 years old that he heard any talk about Jews, and it was mostly in the connection of religious bias. And he said, quote, "I could not avoid an uncomfortable feeling which always came over me when I had to listen to religious disputes," close quote. That's on page 39 of the Murphy translation. So he didn't have a religious attitude toward Jews. And then he says, "Is not their very existence founded on one great lie, namely that they are a religious community, whereas in reality they are a race?" And that's on page 145. Am I still being heard?
Yeah, you're being heard.
Yeah, somebody called in. Let me just see who this person.
Yeah, I
thought
I got
him on.
I was doing it wrong.
Who is this?
I just called in. My name is Walt Hampton, and I'm in South Carolina, and I've been listening in.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question for the Reverend Bill.
Let me qualify one thing first. I don't use titles, right? I'm willing to think. I don't use the title pastor. You won't find it on my website. I don't use the title reverend. I don't call myself by titles. Certain people here in our presence tonight have tried to direct titles on me in order to denigrate me, and I don't use titles.
You sound like the person I want to address my question to, whatever you want to call yourself, because I've been listening to the show.
Go ahead, Walt.
Okay. I'm in South Carolina, and I work with a group down here for Southern Heritage, and there are quite a few Christian identity people involved, you know, with this in addition to Southern Heritage. Now, I do not have a problem with these people insofar as their own personal beliefs. Like, if they want to go off and get on their knees and pray, like a lot of them do, it doesn't cause me any personal distress. The problem I'm having with these people is they want me as an individual to participate in their getting on my knees and bowing my head to their Yahweh or whatever you want to call it, and I find that very offensive.
I'm really glad you brought this topic up, and I would like
if you would just address that.
Yeah, yes, I would. I would, and I'm really pleased you brought this topic up. Too many people the way I would answer those men that wanted to force me to pray in public is that Christ told us to go pray in private, all right? To go in our rooms and pray and not let men see us pray, okay?
Okay, so how should I deal with my problem?
Most public prayer is pretense. It's done in pretense. I don't need to pray in public to show anybody how holy or religious or righteous I am. It's a ritual done in pretense. I don't need it. Okay? I'm not a religious man. I reject religion. Most people, that they bristle when I say that Adolf Hitler was a Christian because they understand that Adolf Hitler didn't display openly any of what they confuse as Christianity. The ritual and the false pretense of piety that you see coming out of modern churches, right? That's seen as Christianity. That's not Christianity. The founding fathers, most of the founding fathers, John Adams specifically said that and this man was a good Christian. He specifically said that he had no use for the ritual and the religion that you see in the churches, because that's all for show. That's all pie. There's a lot of excellent Christians. Hadding might be a great Christian. Will Williams here might be a great Christian, but they never accept the label. You're a good Christian when you live the precepts of Christ, which are basically the simple moral rules encoded in the Ten Commandments. And most good white people never break those rules. And the love for your brethren, your racial kinsmen. That's what Christ requires of us. And if
love
you
your enemy. Love your enemy. Hey, Walt, turn your
cheek. Whoa, don't take that out of context. You're being a clown. You don't know a dance.
It's a sermon on the mount.
No, you know that. I have to agree with Bill here. People who start screaming about, Christianity is all about love your enemy, just lay down and surrender. It's not. I know there's a lot of people who don't understand anything about it anymore and who do this. I know that. That's Christian. Bill would be the first one to say that Christians are a sad lot. He's not standing up for all these Christians. Right, Bill?
Christianity is Judaism. Judeo-Christianity is a big lie. It's a big lie. They take this New Testament totally out of context. They twist it into something universalist, which it was never intended to be. And then they take these terms out of context and generalize them. And they try to apply them to niggers and chinks. And those words don't apply. You're supposed to love your racial enemy. If a man of your own kin does you wrong, you show him love and mercy. But you're
may
not
I rephrase my question?
God's enemies and the enemies of your race.
May I rephrase my question?
Sure.
With your permission, may I rephrase my
question? Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have no problem on an individual basis with people who believe in and accept Christian identity, you know, per se. I feel like it's a private matter, and if they feel comfortable doing that, it doesn't cause me any personal distress. However, the problem I have with it is that the people that are involved with Christian identity are very, very insistent that I personally participate in getting on my knees and praying to their Yahweh.
Well, they're the wrong kind of Christian identity people then. You know, they're not all people that, that are ideal, representatives of it. Right, Bill?
If they were real followers of Christ, they would go in their rooms and pray in private. They wouldn't compel other men to be religious.
My point.
What's your question, Walt?
I answered that the first time. I'm sorry you misunderstood me, but I answered that.
So what are you saying? How should I deal with my issue down here?
You tell them Jesus told me to go in my room in private and pray. That's
what. But I don't believe in Jesus.
No, but they do, and you would show them that they're being hypocritical.
I've tried to do that, but I haven't had much success, and that's why I called in.
Well, why do you think? Do you think that somebody's going to, you know, give you a solution to this? You have to come up with it yourself.
When they start praying, go sharpen your pencils or pull out a sandwich and start eating or something. Just let them know you're not at all interested. They can't force you to.
No, and I don't even know if this is a sincere call because it sounds kind of crazy that somebody is, you know, can't deal with some people in his group.
He's a biological racist stuck in a Christian movement down there in South Carolina. I mean, they're Christian conservative. What are they, Walt?
Yeah, it's called the South Carolina Conservative Action Council, and it's headed by Dr. William Carter, and it's heavily infiltrated by persons of Christian identity.
Well, Jesus
told them to go in private in their rooms and pray, and that's.
Yeah, but that's not why I'm not involved in it for that reason. I'm involved in it because I'm a follower of white nationalism, you know, racial separatism, you know, that sort of thing. And that's creating an issue between me and them.
Well, I've given you the solution, and you don't want to use it. That's not my fault. It's right from the Bible.
Yeah. Somebody's got their sound on too loud or something, so we're hearing an echo.
Well, I've got my volume turned all the way down.
Okay, well, are you finished with your question?
Yes.
I don't think there's any more answer that we can give you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Walt.
Okay, I'd like to finish what I was saying.
Hadding, is this your? Are you having this too loud so I'm hearing my voice come back to me?
I doubt it.
Okay.
All right. I want to finish what I was trying to explain there about Hitler's attitude, which I think is actually somewhere between the positions of Will Williams and Bill Fink. What I gather from reading Hitler is that he personally did not believe in the Christian religion, but considered it a very bad idea to try to get rid of it. And he talks about the pan-German leader, George Schönerer, whom he admired very much, but Schönerer made a big mistake in Hitler's view by trying to fight the Catholic faith because he thought that this was something alien and they should get rid of it and that then they could have German unity more easily. And this is Hitler's explanation. I think this is the core of Hitler's explanation.
Now, where does this come from? Where do you read it?
This is from Mein Kampf, from the Murphy translation. His explanation of why he wouldn't attack Christianity. He said, quote, "The great masses of a nation are not composed of philosophers. For the masses of the people, especially faith, is absolutely the only basis of a moral outlook on life. There may be a few hundreds of thousands of superior men who can live wisely and intelligently without depending on the general standards that prevail in everyday life from religion, but the millions of others cannot do so. In other words, what he's saying is...
We know what he's saying. I can understand what he's saying.
You need to keep religion for the sake of the masses.
No. Well, let's not get... You know, Hitler did not like the way the churches operated. And I would agree with him 100%. And in fact, I would go a lot further than he did. However, you're confusing the churches and Christianity, Hadding. The church function and church dogmas and church rituals, they're not necessarily Christianity. That's your first mistake.
Well, I don't have the German text in front of me here, but the polarity that Murphy gives in his translation is between faith and philosophy. He has Hitler saying philosophers on the one hand and people who follow faith on the other. You're contending that Hitler was not a philosopher but a follower of faith, or maybe you think you can be both. But there's this polarity here in the text.
Yeah, you know, there are many excerpts of Mein Kampf that could be taken to prove that Hitler was a Christian. There are also many excerpts of Mein Kampf that could be taken to prove that Hitler didn't necessarily like the way the churches functioned and the things that they did. He hated their evangelism to Negroes. Well, I would assert that evangelism to Negroes is not truly Christian. It's part of Roman Catholic tradition, yes, but it's not truly Christian. So there's a difference between what is Christianity and what is church ritual. I call it churchianity. And Christian identity, very, very many people like me call it churchianity. It's not Christianity. And Hitler's basic philosophies outlined, his political and social philosophies outlined throughout Mein Kampf are very Christian in nature. They're very Christian. You can't recognize them because you don't understand Christianity.
I do recognize some resonance with Christianity, but just, as you've mentioned earlier, you also find some resonance with other ancient doctrines. You don't have to say that it's specifically Christian.
But you know, the love for one's race and the way that Hitler couched things and the way that he couched his criticisms of race mixing and the way that he couched a lot, not all, but a lot of his criticisms of the Jews were very Christian in nature. Hitler clearly received a lot of his foundational social philosophies from Christianity, real Christianity, not churchianity.
You're making a big generalization there with no specifics.
Well, the sacrifice of the individual on behalf of the community, that is a Christian doctrine. I've done several podcasts on that prove that.
That's a sociobiological doctrine.
It's lost on most white people today. Don't tell most white people understand it today. Don't dare say that.
Kevin MacDonald could explain the sacrifice of an individual for the gene pool.
You can explain it in various positions and views, Hadding. If there's not only, you know, it doesn't necessarily can only be explained from one position. Because I think Bill is right that the sacrifice of the single person to his whole community is Christian. It's included
not
in
specifically,
Christianity.
Specifically, no,
too.
It's not.
It is included in Christianity. It is Christian, but it's not.
It is Christian. I don't find that. I mean, I could be wrong, but I can't recall it from. You know, I hadn't read the Greek philosophers, and I admit that, but I've read the tragic poets, the epic poets, the elegiac poets, the bucolic poets, and I don't remember that from any of their writing.
Well, there are plenty of dying gods in ancient religion. Socrates sacrificed for the ideal of the truth.
Oh, well, that's totally...
This is one of the parallels that led Schopenhauer to say that Christianity is Platonism for the masses.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we've got 6 minutes. How can we pull this together in some way?
Well,
you're not interested in the... you're not interested in the public trust in government. I was trying to lead that into. Well, I was trying to lead that into, you know, if there was a, if we had opportunities here, you know, whereas I was saying that 41%, only 41% trusted government to do what's right, and only 13% in this poll, even though I agree with Will that I don't trust, I don't like these polls either, but only 13% they say trust government leaders to tell the truth. That's lower than the business people. But not by much. But then it says that among the informed public group, whatever they are, 69% viewed an academic or expert as a credible spokesperson, while 61% looked to a person like yourself. That is one another. That is like on the internet, people are listening to people who don't have any big reputation, you know, and learning from them. That's what I got from that. People are still trusting academics or those who they perceive as experts. But also a lot of people are willing to listen to others. So, I mean, I'm trying to think that I want to make this real quick, that there's maybe an opening here. And I think Sandy Hook gives a good opportunity for it because, the story of Sandy Hook is falling apart more and more and people are very interested in it. You can find a lot about it on the internet. And there, that it's a fake, that a lot of it, at least a lot of it is fake, that the news reports have a lot of fake stuff in them. And where we, you know, have this distrust going on, and this horrible gun control legislation looming around, I think we should be making a big push, you know, that maybe could succeed for these reasons if we get people to do something. Or if we could have a unified voice. Okay, that's it.
Don't put too much trust in these informed people. Are these people with college degrees or what makes them so much better than the rest of us? I was reading I'm transcribing this, The Alienated Society of Dr. Pearson. He describes our educational system 40 years ago. He describes, see if this sounds like it kind of fits the informed class.
Well, I don't think that's what they meant by informed, but anyway.
That's what I take it to be. Current educational philosophy in America is individual-centered rather than race-centered. And the educational system is geared to produce well-adjusted cogs in the modern industrial economic machine. This is in line with the atomistic or ant heap view of society, which follows from neoliberal doctrine. And, he goes on and on about how...
Well, that's right, you see, because I don't know if I'm getting a cue or not. I'm probably not going to... We're probably not going to hear our cues. I'm looking... Oh, we have 60 seconds, that's all. All right, I think that we're not going to accomplish anything if we just point out how bad everybody is. We're going to have to take some kind of positive action and get in as many people as possible to see that there's opportunities and to act in this way. Now we got 30 seconds left. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests, Will Williams and Bill Fink, and thank you, Hadding, for your contribution, and thank the caller. And this has been a pretty interesting show. I'll let everybody have their own opinion of it. And I want to... ask you to maybe we'll do this again. I don't know if anybody will want to do it, but I know the music's probably on. I don't hear it.
I want
okay, we're off.
Of course, but I want him to do it in private. Okay, don't put it on the internet. He can pray for our souls and all that, but please don't do it publicly, Bill. Okay.
Well, I can't say that I would.
Well, we're off the air, so we can just say what we want here.
Yeah, that was a riot, Carolyn. Thank you.
Well, you came on really like gangbusters. More than.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.